You're listening to the Greening Out podcast. This show contains profanity, hate for the state, and themes of a libertarian nature. If you are easily offended, please listen to something else. For more, visit greeningoutpodcast.co.uk. Hi, I'm Katie Green.
Hi, I'm Dan Green, and welcome back to the Greening Out podcast.
Welcome back to the Greening Out podcast.
Yes, and today we're joined again by Anthony Samaroff. Anthony, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and it's good to be speaking with you as well, Katie, as it was just Dan and I last time.
Yeah, the last time it was you guys. I did listen to the show. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to talking to you myself, because I've got a few questions I don't think Dan quite got. It's okay. It's all right. It's not like it's not a slight on you, Dan. It's just I can't
believe you didn't ask those questions.
I know, Dan. What's wrong with you, Dan?
Terrible.
That's really bad. Right. Okay. So it's nice to have another Scottish person on the show.
That's always good.
It's always nice. I like to keep it local. Anthony, yes, thank you so much for coming to the show. I'm going to get more serious now because I feel a wee bit silly.
Okay, but don't be too serious.
Okay, no, I promise. I never am.
Not possible.
No, not possible. No.
Okay, great. Now, too much seriousness is like a disease of the mind, I think.
Yeah, people take things far too seriously.
Yeah, when we started podcasting, we took ourselves way too seriously and then we decided, nah.
No.
If we're getting on to the more seriousness. On the last show that you and I did, I remember you mentioned that you thought that sort of libertarianism was more of a kind of political philosophy, whereas voluntarism was more of a personal philosophy. Could you expand on that a little bit and tell us what you mean?
Yeah, I think that's the way that I kind of see those concepts. Libertarianism is a political philosophy that is obviously pro-free market and individual freedom and And whereas I sort of see voluntarism as more of a moral philosophy, which is that, you know, you don't aggress against anyone, you don't take anyone's stuff. Now, if you look at applying that to politics, the natural progression of that is something very similar to libertarianism. I mean, some libertarians believe that the state should exist to protect our property and our judiciary and what's the third thing? National defence.
Oh yeah.
And, like army kind of thing.
So some, but then other people call themselves libertarians, and they don't believe there should be any state at all. Mm. Well, the natural progression of believing that you shouldn't hit anyone or take anyone's stuff or defraud anyone, which I guess is a form of theft. Theft of time or something like that, mm-hmm. Then the natural progression is you can't really have a government because the government is, by its very nature, based on the threat of force or force itself. You know, if you don't do what the government says, then someone's going to come to your house and throw you in a cage. So if you don't believe that violence is a good way to run society, then you probably don't believe that there should be such a thing as a government. The word anarchist is pretty good as well, but then the left kind of got that word first, and most of the first people to politically identify themselves as anarchists were very close to communists. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem with terminology in that things in politics mean different things from what they first meant. So, you know, a liberal used to be something like us, you know, someone who believed in free markets. Now a liberal is someone, a classic liberal, that would be called.
Yeah.
Now a liberal's, you know, something quite different, you know,
Betty.
Something like more like what I was growing up.
Mm.
Libertarianism, even that used to just mean a socialist. And Murray Rothbard, an anarcho-capitalist, I guess you guys will have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
I've never come across that name on Twitter or anything.
Great, thank you.
I jest.
Yeah, he celebrated the fact that we'd nicked the word from the left, and he said as much. He said, you know, we've made a great victory in taking this word, taking possession of this word, libertarian. So, I don't know. I like the word voluntarism because it reflects a philosophy that's not just about, the government should do something about this, or, you know, it really gives you personal responsibility for your life. You know, you've got a responsibility to not aggress against other people, and then you can start applying that to things. So obviously in recent years, probably mostly inspired by Stefan Molyneux, that's been really pushed as something that you should apply to bringing up your kids. You know, don't aggress against your kids, don't shout against your kids. And you can actually see applying that moral philosophy to your life. Whereas when you have a political philosophy, like that's what I generally describe libertarianism as, a political philosophy, it doesn't really have any relevance to you. You can hold it up out there. You know, we always say that lefties are kind of like, oh, well, why doesn't the government do something about the poor? And it's like, well, you know, why don't you? Why don't you go down to the soup kitchen? You know, I totally support that. I'd say that's a virtuous thing to do. You know, I'm a conscientious environmentalist, so I went and on a forest planting retreat a couple of times, and that was really awesome because that was me actually living my values. But I think that libertarians can also be guilty of doing the same thing if they don't actually see their political philosophy also as a personal moral philosophy. I don't know if I was too long-winded there, but I think I've more or less got the idea across.
There's no such thing as too long-winded, man, is
not
fine.
On our show.
not in this house.
But I suppose this kind of comes down to sort of labels and things like that, doesn't it? Because I speak to people and everyone's got the one label they don't like. I know some people that like don't like the term anarcho-capitalist, even though that's kind of their views. They don't like that because it's like putting anarchist and capitalist together, two things which people usually don't like anyway. And it's like mashing them into one thing.
I think the word anarchy, though, lends itself to a lot of interpretation these days.
Oh yeah, because you have it being used wrong everywhere,
especially in like the liberal media. No, but I'm saying, like, you know, we've had you know, perhaps in some Hollywood films where they say it's anarchism, but in fact it's actually anarcho-communism, and it's quite violent, and it's quite...
Or when people use the word anarchy to mean general chaos instead of an absence of rulers.
It's so not right. It just means without rulers you don't have
Sorry. And there is a term that means that, which is anime. What people think about anarchy, which is when you throw Molotov cocktails and smash windows and there's no law. The word anime describes that. For a long time, really up until recently, I wasn't very comfortable calling myself a libertarian, but I just accept that people would call me that. So, really the same with anarcho-capitalist. I really hated that word because I would have liked to define capitalism as a system that does require, you know, that has corporations in it, whereas I don't necessarily believe that there would be corporations in a free market, like in a voluntary society and what we would call an anarcho-capitalist society. I guess I'm okay with being called that by other anarcho-capitalists, but I'd never introduce myself as these terms in a political debate. I would usually say that I'm an anarchist. And the reason for that is if I'm going to have a political debate with someone, I know that everyone has their comfort zone. What I'd like to do is find where we've got common ground and then sort of argue at the margins of their belief system, like take chips out of it. Because I know that 9 times out of 10, if you go straight for the center, then people, you know, took a long time to come to the conclusions they have, especially if they're thinkers and talkers, or they've been to university and discussed politics a lot. So what I'd like to do is kind of warm people up to maybe changing their opinions over time, because that doesn't usually happen in one or two conversations.
It never does. It's always a process. Like, I can even think about, you know, sort of the process to take me to get to just where I am now. Like,
it took a long time, but nobody brought you there, though. That was something you did.
Yeah,
but you kind of have to.
I'm also kind of conscious of, well, as well, that if I live another 20 years, I'll probably think slightly differently.
You'll think, what was that guy like at 28? He was a complete idiot.
Aye, probably, you know, like, I'm always conscious of that. But it's interesting, the whole labels and things, like, you know, that Bill Buford runs Zero Gov, he just calls himself an abolitionist, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I really like the term state abolitionist, but I'm kind of greedy about it because I think that I came up with it one time when I heard the anarcho-communist.
It's mine.
Michael Albert, he said, I'm a market abolitionist in the same way that someone might be a state a slavery abolitionist or a slavery. So I thought, State abolitionist. That sounds pretty tasty. Maybe I can write a treatise called On the Abolition of State and call myself a state ab. But then again, that implies that you'd want to do it tomorrow. And I personally don't think that would be a particularly good idea. I don't know about you guys.
I don't think the world's quite ready for this yet.
You can't throw society in at the deep end just like that. It would have to be a process, I think.
It would have to be a really overall shift in consciousness of a nation.
Was it not Henry Hazlitt? Or I can't remember who said it, but someone was like, you know, he was responding to minarchists and from a sort of anarchist point of view, and he was like, well, what about if you just keep cutting back the state little by little? If like public order and things aren't threatened, then keep cutting. But if public order and things and you're on the verge of chaos, then that's the amount of government to cut.
But see, this is the thing though, people these days are very quick to jump up about any kind of cuts because they're making cuts in places that people see as threatening the most,
right?
The most
at risk in our society. People that cannot take it, the people that do rely on the state. There are people who do.
Yeah.
And that's when you run into the territory. A lot of people run there, and it's difficult territory because of course, we are human beings and we have compassion. But the state doesn't, for me, the state is not the only option, really, for
right.
that. I don't know if I'm explaining that right.
No, I understand.
Or I'm not really wording this.
I think what you mean is that, you know, because of the developments in the state, people have become so dependent on it now that if you took it away, then it would result in lots of people being in a desperate situation. And I think what you're saying is you wouldn't like that, but you do think that if there wasn't a state in the first place, or if the state was phased out, then there wouldn't be so many people in that position.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up. I'm not good with my words.
I think you're fine.
Thank you.
Well, sorry, you go, Dan.
No, well, you're the guest, Anthony.
Yes, please.
Oh, thank you.
Go on.
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking is that. Well, that's one of the things that really, really annoys me about the anti-cuts movement, because they were running around with banners that said absolutely no cuts. And for me, that was a wasted opportunity, because they could be running around with banners saying things like, if you can't afford welfare, then you can't afford the wars. You know, you could have made the anti-cuts movement an anti-war movement and used it to push your troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Or you could say, no money for X, then no money for corporate welfare. You know, these things that the left, and the thing is, there's no libertarian movement in the UK, really. I mean, this is us, you know.
Yay, the three of us sitting here wearing our kilts, sitting around a fire.
If there was one, you know, these are things that both people who identify as liberty-minded people in the free market sense and leftists agree on. And that's where we could find the most common ground. And the anti-cuts movement should have been used to try and get the government to cut programs that the left don't agree with anyway, whether it's nuclear weapons and things like that, because then you actually have a platform that people can digest. When people are being given this dialogue about austerity and the need to cut, in actual fact, the Tory government have increased government spending, but they're getting this, you know, we need to cut back on spending. And most people believe that. So when you say absolutely no cuts, you sound like a maniac to a great number of mainstream people. Whereas you can say, we don't have to cut this. We can cut this stuff that no one really wants instead. Then you're actually providing a platform that people can digest. And it's stupid to say no cuts. I mean, do these people have so little imagination that they can imagine anything that the government does that it should not be doing?
I can think of a couple of buildings that they own that are probably pretty pricey, you know, London there. You are right though, Anthony, that it was a wasted opportunity. Dan, you were going to say?
I know, it's interesting that we sort of bring in a bit of the sort of context here, because that's kind of what's going on. You know, there was this big anti-cuts march recently and stuff like that. And I don't know if you find this as well, but it's sort of, I mean, it's almost like it would probably be hard to be a libertarian if anyone knew what the word meant, because most of the time when I mention that, people are kind of like, you're a what? But then you explain it to them and they think that you're some kind of Tory.
Yeah, They think they're
like a Tory that wants to do drugs, and it's like,
and it's like, no, I'm not. I promise. It's difficult.
Do you ever think? Do you have kind of? Do you have these kind of ever communication problems with people? Like, just based, do you find people kind of don't get what you're about at first glance?
I have all occasionally heard something like, I can't believe someone with your length of hair would be expressing these views, which is pretty good.
That's funny, because Dan's got long hair now too, and I'm totally like, he looks like a hippie Jesus, but, you know, but he wants a gun.
So, right. You know. Well, this is the thing. I have had people say that, you know, maybe say that my, oh, so you want something that the Tories want, and it's kind of like a fallacious argument, because... you know, the old, well, Hitler got the trains running on time. I don't know if that's actually true or not. That's actually in question whether he did.
Do you know what? But, I wouldn't be surprised if he did. The man was, you know, he had a lot of charisma and he used it for bad. But I'm just saying, you know, the dude, okay. You know, he probably did get the train running on time.
But. I don't know. I mean, again, I've had this debate before. Like, was he really charismatic? Because all I see is him shouting and things like that in the videos. I think that's more like maybe passionate. But yeah, people say it's charisma if they get someone to lead them. I think like charisma is like someone coming in and being really super charming.
Yeah, being nice. Yeah.
But I digress. I guess what I mean is, just because you agree with someone on one count doesn't mean that you come from the same angle as them. I mean, some people like have different reasons for believing in the same thing, believe it or not, and I think that kind of the conservatives are more feudalists. I don't know if that's an extreme thing to say, but the thing is, in a way, right, as a free marketeer, right, I can even use the word capitalist, okay? I'm a capitalist.
This is a safe place, Anthony. It's okay.
I know, it's a safe place. No one's going to attack me.
No one's going to hurt you.
Oh man, where was I going with that?
Well, no, you're saying as a capitalist.
Yeah, I think that the Conservative Party have done more damage to our ideology, so to speak, than any liberal has. Because when people think about capitalism and free markets, they think of the Tories. And, you know, Margaret Thatcher massively increased spending, but she did it on things like the military. It's been a problem for us, and at least when like the Reds get in, people see how, well, sometimes people see how ridiculous their platforms are in the long term, but then again, you know, sometimes it's hard to trace back particular policies to the government that enacted them, because they only come in 5-10 years time. But yeah, I do think that Labour spending was a complete fucking disaster, and a lot of people think that, and especially think about it about Labour in the 70s. So at least people can see that. But then when the Tories get in, then they just absolutely destroy people's perceptions of what a free market society could really be like by being corporatist and by expanding spending, but in things like military and things like that. Although I would say they did do one policy which I think was really good, which is lower the amount of tax that people on low incomes are earning.
Yeah,
I think that was a really great policy.
Is it the first 10 grand now that you earn, or is it going to be?
I think it's something like that. Yeah. And, you know, that's pretty much the only thing that I've heard from them so far that was like, oh, that's a pretty good policy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they have been a disaster for the ideology of capitalism. And you were talking about dismantling the state. And there is a difficulty in doing that, because anyone who's got a vested interest in the state, as in if their income depends on it, they're naturally going to tend towards thinking that that's necessary and that they won't have a job without it. They don't necessarily see what Henry Hanslet explained, that, you know, you're basically taking water out of the deep end of the pool and trying to pour it into the shallow end of the pool to make the shallow end deep. You know, and probably spilling some along the way. I know that's not the analogy he used, but in Economics in One Lesson, he basically explains that trying to redistribute income in this way through public spending is something like that.
Yeah, I understand that. It makes sense.
And it's kind of a, I don't know what I use the word, peculiarity.
Peculiarity. That's a big old word.
That's the thing in Scotland, like, people are big on state spending. You know, I find particularly as well, I mean, it's just, I know that we can say different areas are different, but like, you know, in general, from what I've noticed, between the Scottish and English people, I've noticed the Scottish people tend to be more naturally to the left. And it's just sort of how they are. Like, even if they don't necessarily understand the word socialist or know anything about economics, the kind of things that they tend towards when people talk are generally things that we would call sort of left-wing policies. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, because Katie and I, we actually did a show one time trying to figure this out. Like, maybe
we did
some
bring
reasons.
It back, though. We did manage to go into some history about Scotland, especially about Glasgow, and kind of find out, you know, Red Clydeside and all that. Like, you know, what was the history of this that led to this sort of national collective idea that left is the left is the right way to go.
I'm not 100% sure on the history of that. Sorry, what was your question going to be?
I'm not sure.
No, I was just going to ask if you, like, I'm just interested if you, like, if you think the same way, if you think that people here generally tend to be more left as a default, and if you had any kind of, I don't know,
Because we're not sure, because it could that's just be the people that we know.
Yeah, that's why I'm, well, that's why I'm, like, weird about saying that I'm a capitalist. Do you know what I mean?
You scared you're going to get lynched in the street.
Well, the thing is, you also have to understand that we never had access to any of this information before the internet, and like Ron Paul really maybe made people in this country first understand anything about libertarianism, because before that I was a liberal and my dad was a conservative, but he wasn't a conservative, or he wasn't a he believed in capitalism, but he wasn't a free marketeer for the reasons that we are, which is, you know, we've researched the arguments on both sides thoroughly and come to that conclusion. He was a business owner, and he'd always been a Tory, and his family had always been Tories. And so he had a natural tendency. Plus, he comes from a generation where that's the sort of thing that happens. You know, you have certain allegiances because you where you were born anyway. You know, that generation had a lot of my country right or wrong. We're taught, we grew up in a postmodern age where you're meant to question everything more so, you know, more so than their generation. So you have political allegiances, you had allegiance to your football team and your patriotism and all these things. And you came up with the, we are the heroes that defeated the Nazis and all of this stuff. So there was a sense of tribalism that was more ingrained in society and our parents' generation and their parents' generation and ours. So when I debated with him, that made me think I was right, because he had his political leanings for, maybe he couldn't exactly describe why, but he could make some arguments. And for me, they were pretty poor arguments, and I defeated them many times, and he'd come up with the same arguments again. Why? Because I did a lot of reading, but was reading on the left. Then sort of I found out about Ron Paul, and he was the first capitalist that I'd ever heard that was against the war, that was against corporate welfare, that was against the war on drugs, and all these things that I agreed with as a liberal. So I never even knew such a thing existed. I thought if you were a capitalist, then you were pro-war. And I think a lot of people in Scotland have that, because that's the way it's been presented to us for centuries. Now people are starting to hear about libertarianism, and over the last 5 years, you've seen all these articles on websites taking the piss out of libertarians. Before, there was no
You know it's popular when they're making fun of you.
That's it. Before that, there was no need to write those articles because you never spoke to a libertarian. Now these people must be getting in debates with their Facebook friends or friends of friends who are libertarians, and they're like, what? And then they're like, oh, this is ridiculous, I can't grok this. Oh, surely you can't be pro-free market. And so they have to go away and write articles about how stupid we are. But, you know, it's good that they do, because that means that they're actually feeling a bit challenged. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother. And I definitely know that when I started coming across these videos, I might sometimes leave a snide comment or actually listen to the video and pick out one or two things that I disagreed with and put them in my YouTube comments. And I guess I was doing that because I kind of wanted to be convinced. And over a course of years, I was. So that just shows that, you know, it takes time to change opinions. At least it did for me, but I've always been a critical thinker. And I think the problem is a lot of people who are on the left consider themselves to be critical thinkers, and also they're far more well-informed than the majority of the electorate. So when they debate with other people who are conventional, they think, oh, I obviously know more than everyone because there's no match here. And that makes them more firm in their opinions. But, you know, they should really be debating people who are very well informed and have differing opinions to them rather than, you know, your conventional person.
That's interesting. I wonder, Anthony, so are you a fan of sort of challenging people on believing what they believe? Like, I don't mean in a bad way. I mean, do you like to sort of do that with people? You like to speak to them and maybe pick their brain a bit and find out why do you think the way you do?
Yeah, sometimes. I don't know. Uh-huh. I mean, I think I like discussing issues with people.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it because when I speak to people, sometimes I take the very sort of, and I do justify it in my mind as the right thing. I don't really debate with people because I think I'm not going to change their mind. But do you think that's probably maybe a bit of a backward way?
No, I don't. I think if you don't enjoy it, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. It just stresses me out.
Well, then there's no need for you to expose yourself to something that stresses you out. Mm. Like, I will get to the point with people. First of all, if people are verbally aggressive, then I tend to shut down the conversation because I don't like it. It makes me feel bad. But the thing is, I've got, somehow or other, I've got a way of debating that tends to make people not verbally aggressive. And I don't really get to debate with strangers that often. Maybe it's because I'm not being confrontational enough. Maybe I'm not really challenging their opinions. But because I'm always trying to first come from the common ground of sort of what we agree on and then trying to challenge at the sides of their views, you know, at the margins, to sort of push their views more towards mine. Now, some people could say that's manipulative, and maybe some people would. I kind of don't see it that way. I kind of see it as, you have to know your audience. Like, if you were talking to, you don't talk to, you need to come, you need to
speak to someone about things that they sort of understand.
Yeah.
You can't just be talking about speaking Chinese to someone who doesn't speak Chinese.
Right. You need to speak in their language. So, but the thing
is, that's a better way to put it, yes.
What I find with frustrating about it is sometimes when you're debating, or let's say having a exchange of opinions with a liberal. What will often happen is if you say, well, I'm an anarchist, don't believe in any government at all, then they say, well, you need government for X. And then you say, well, government doesn't actually help with X. It makes it worse because blah, 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 blah. And you point out things that the government does that makes that issue worse. And they're like, yeah, I totally agree with you, but it would still be worse without the government. And you're like, you just admitted that government makes that issue worse. So how are you saying that it would be even worse? If the government's making it worse, not better, how would it? But I don't know, you know, a really good thing to do before you challenge anyone's opinion is just to say, oh, that's interesting. Why do you think that? Or how did you come to that conclusion? Or if you say it nicely, if you go, oh, really, based on what evidence? Like, I've had really, really great conversations where someone said something I completely disagree with, and I felt that, you know, that surge of energy that happens when someone says something that's an affront to you, your brain. And I just cooled down for a second and it just went, you know, all right, based on what evidence? And they were like, based on the evidence that, and they explained why they believed what they believed. And because I listened to them better, when I said, oh, that's interesting, based on what I've read, or I've come to the, you know, you can talk about where you learned it and why you believe it, or you know, and they're much, much more likely to take your opinion on board when you do that. And I know that from firsthand experience. And the great thing about it is no one needs to take my word for it. You can try it a few times and find out for yourself if it makes your debates better natured.
I might try that next time I'm over at my mum's. I might give that one a go.
It's really hard to do with parents.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's a flogging a dead horse. We're not gonna try that one again.
I'm really good at keeping my cool in debates with anyone except family.
Yeah.
Although I don't really debate with them anymore, because for the main part, because it's kind of fruitless.
Yeah.
And yeah, you do want to be. But the thing is, you know, there's a value in finding out where someone's coming from, even if you don't agree with them, because then you can learn how people who have those views tick.
Yeah.
I do not suggest continuing to debate and debate with people who've shown that they're immune to reason and evidence, because it'll just frustrate you. You know, Robert Heinlein said, "And the moon is a harsh mistress. Never debate a pig. It's pointless. Oh no, it's never try to teach a pig how to speak. It's pointless and it annoys the hell out of the pig."
I like that. I'm going to find that.
See, what I generally do, in fact, this happens a lot, like in work, when people are, you know, spouting their views about politics, and a lot of it's wildly inaccurate. And if somebody asks me, I just
start... Dan's chewing his own face.
I start dryly talking about economics so that they'll leave me alone. Like, because see, if you just dryly start it, they'll look at you and then they'll get really bored and they'll find an excuse to go do something else.
Yeah.
It's the best way, man. It just shuts people up in a kind of friendly way.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that since we're getting on and we're talking sort of maybe Scotland specific, one thing, if we're talking about sort of the way we think and stuff, I think in a way, I don't know what you think, is what the question is, I suppose. Like, do you kind of feel a bit, I don't know, I don't want to say worried.
You don't know how to word this, do you?
No,
I see it in your eyes.
I don't want to say worried. I think that Scotland, you know, is in some ways going a little bit backwards in terms of, you know, liberty and things. And the one of the ways I kind of see that is the massive support that's been flocking to the Scottish National Party. You know,
well, they've flown in on their white horse. They're going to
flown in on their white horse.
They're going to save the planet. Do you not know this?
Do you have views? What do you think about the SNP, Anthony?
Well, I mean, they've got some pretty authoritarian policies, but I kind of stay at. I'm kind of like trying to be ignoring it. I kind of, in a way that I kind of like them getting in, because Labour have never been punished for all the horrible, horrible things they did. And now it's good to see them being kicked in the head by the SNP.
That is kind of fun.
I hate to say.
So in that way, but the thing is, the sad thing is politics is like a reality TV show. It's kind of like there's no real... The sad thing is it's the one reality TV show that actually affects the world. And the reason why I say it's a reality TV show is it's just this kind of like Punch and Judy show that we can watch, and sadly it does have an effect on our lives and things like that, but it's all fake because it's all on borrowed money and we're so much in debt and things like that. And yeah, okay, the political situation's bad. I can't really do much to change it. I don't really want to spend my mental energy. I much prefer political philosophy to politics, because a good argument that's well-reasoned and sound, a valid argument that's sound and in line with the empirical evidence of the world, should actually last for all eternity. It should be true in all contexts. If it's a true statement, then it's universally true, whereas politics... whatever you can write or say about it is only relevant in the moment. I guess things might be going badly, but I feel like much more empowered in the sort of work I do. You know, we talked last time about my work as a helper, helping people with their personal development, because I actually see people's lives improving, and I can have a great conversation about politics, or a frustrating conversation where we both agree that things are going in a bad direction, and none of us really profits from that. So I guess in a way I'm admitting to being hopeless about that.
I understand what you're saying, and that's kind of what I am. I'm in a place where I'm watching it and I'm a spectator to it, but I am refusing to let it affect my life. I'm trying to get to a point where I don't have to even know what's going on, because it doesn't affect me. I'd love to get to that point. I kind of wanted to ask something. Dan, you're looking at me peculiarly.
This is just my face.
That's just your face. You have chronic weird face. No, I wanted to ask, Auntie, I wanted to sort of change it up, because I know we're going down a political route that's dark and I don't like it. So I want to take it back to sort of anarchy. And I want to say that personally for me, anarchy is like, I don't like the idea that a lot of people have where they go through life and they accept these roles, like, you know, caregiver, receiver, you know, you fall into these roles in life, and a lot of people think they have to fall into roles and almost sort of make themselves into almost a character. Whereas I think anarchy is just taking all of that away, all the shoulds away. Like, I should be doing this. I should be having kids. I should be working hard. I should be saving money. I should be, just these sort of, maybe I would say conventions, these sort of conventional ideas that people have and just think that's the one way that you can do things. For me, anarchy is kind of breaking that down and taking that away. And I think you can apply that to your life.
Right.
And you could, that's for me, that's what anarchy is. So do you subscribe to that idea, or do you think it's good to have more of a structure? I'm just curious. Yeah,
I think that's really powerful. And it comes back to kind of what we said at the beginning about voluntarism and libertarianism and labels. Like, I wish I'd said, you know, I think that the principle is, if two people say, that's cool, they both volunteer for it, then it's cool. And if not, then it's not. And a lot of these labels that you describe are sort of more imposed on us, either deliberately because people believe they're true or want us to believe they're true, or sort of insidiously as a cultural background, you know, part of the cultural unconscious. You should be doing this because your gender is such, rather than, do I want to do this? Does this benefit me? Can I view this critically? So I think in a way what you're saying is deconditioning your mind and trying to see things clearly and actually assessing things is turning yourself into an anarchy, where you're not self-governed by these rules that you've imbibed and that have been culturally introjected into you. And, you know, I'm not going to visit my parents at the weekend. I feel really guilty about that, even though, you know, whatever, I never really get on with them and it all always ends up in a fight. But culturally,
you're psychic. You're psychic, Anthony. Oh, my goodness. No, I'm just kidding. Things are going okay. Please continue.
But I would say that long term, I know, after admitting I'm hopeless with a view to the Scottish situation, in the long term, I'm absolutely an optimist. I mean, there's never been so much access to information. Like, you know, people have heard of our, first of all, our political principles and our arguments, whereas they hadn't before. Even 10 years ago. I mean, I met with friends that I've not seen in ages, who might, like years and years, who've heard of Stefan Molyneux or someone like that, you know, that's on the YouTube. They know actually some of the libertarian arguments, right? They might still be in the left, but they know a little bit more about what this is about. And, you know, it's a free market, so in ideas, and the best ideas tend to win out over time. The problem has always been that people, basically Bastiat, identification of the seen and the unseen, right? So when you take away some part of government, in the short term, it might look bad because it was providing service X. What you can't see is that because it was providing service X, all this Y stuff wasn't happening, and no one can see that. But now with more access to information, more people are going to become familiar with this. And I don't think there's ever been so many libertarians on the planet as there are now, just because of the internet. And I think in the long term we win. But I think more importantly is making your own life an anarchy, as you were saying. You know, be a voluntarist. Make sure you've got good, kind-hearted people around you that help build you up, and you help build up, that aren't aggressive towards you, and that you aren't aggressive towards them. And if you are, then apologize and take ownership for that, and commit to mending it, so that we can actually be a model for what anarchy looks like. Because people are partly persuaded by personalities, and I have persuaded people of the voluntarist position, but it was almost invariably people who already admired me and thought I was kind of a cool guy. And maybe that's a flaw, but then on the other hand, you know what I mean, no one wants to follow a diet plan that was created by someone who's overweight. And if you're
exactly.
you know, if you, what I'd really like to see is well, I mean, I know what I want to do with my life. As you guys know, I'm in personal development, and one day I want to raise enough cash to start a retreat where people can come and live for 1 week or 2 weeks or a month or just live there and involve themselves in personal development activities every day with other people who are into that.
Mm-hmm.
And, hopefully, part of that will be, the ethics of that place would be voluntarist principles. That's what I mean when I say you can apply it to everyday life. You know, everyone, no one will cheat, defraud, steal each other's stuff or hit each other. Otherwise, there'll have to be some conflict resolution.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create, that's what I want to do. I want to create my own society because I can't change all of society. But what I can do is I can create a place where people who have similar values to me can actually come and live.
Mm-hmm.
And, if it's awesome and it's really cool, then other people will come and say, hey, how did you set up this place? How does it work? We want to create one. So, yeah.
Is that your sort of your long-term goal then? Is that what you'd really like to do? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to be there 10, 15 years from now.
That's cool.
And, hopefully people could raise the kids there peacefully. And I've heard that there's places where they already enact these, rules for resolving conflicts, that when a couple has a conflict, they always do it in front of two other people, because when you have a conflict with someone else, you're the least capable of giving them empathy because you need empathy themselves. So everyone's trained in sort of conflict resolution techniques, and when a couple want to have a conflict, there's two other people in the room to help them get the empathy that they need and also translate what the other person is saying. So there's some data out there onto how to run societies better and groups of people better. And if you can just be a model for that, and you don't have to have a retreat to do it, you can do it in your own life. Just be a really awesome, kind person that has space for other people and process your pain so that when someone else talks about their pain, you can hear them without it triggering up all your stuff, and you can just be with them and allow them to feel whatever they feel, and they'll feel better. And you draw a quality of person to yourself by doing that, who's also compassionate and warm and kind, and create the kind of society you would like to live in your own life, and just see who you draw to yourself, and then they'll be your allies. And the more of us that are doing this, the better, because then people will be coming to us to ask us how to resolve their conflicts and things, and we can spread it. And I think that the state, in a way, I know I've been going on for a long time, is a symptom of the fact that people don't know how to resolve conflicts. Because think about it, if people were amazing at solving their own interpersonal conflicts, government would just look stupid. It's like, why are we being belligerent to Iran, right? Why are we doing that? Like, that's stupid. We should be like having peace talks or whatever. If people were really good at solving their own problems, then just government would look stupid. We think that some authority is required to solve our problems because we can't seem to do it on our own. So I just like, you've got one shot at being you. So pick up some great self-help books. There's loads of free resources on YouTube and create an awesome life.
Well, you could actually send us some of the links. We could put them at the bottom of the show.
Oh, well,
if you'd want to, Anthony, could send us some stuff.
I think there's some pretty good resources on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
And there's a kind of cool presentation that's just about 15 minutes long on the basics of effective communication. And then there's other videos that go on to some of those topics in more detail. Because I've not posted any videos for a while because I'm working on a book and an online program. And I'd like to have those ready to go by the time I next start posting videos. But I have tried very hard to be concise because I don't want to waste anyone's time, and second of all, to only put out information that's actionable. So when people check out my YouTube channel, you will get information that you can actually use in your day-to-day life to get on with the people you know better. And other things than that, they're all self-help topics, but a lot of them are around communication, because I'm only really interested, like, when it comes to this stuff, I just want to give people tools, you know, that they can go out and practice and that will actually have some effect in their life. I don't want to philosophize too much. I mean,
sure,
I love philosophizing, but
you're more of an action person as opposed to the talker.
And it took me ages to become that. Well, I think it's just because I love stuffing my brain full of information so much that when I actually came around to coming down to it, when I learned that it's so much more important to read a little and apply a lot, then I thought, well, look, what I'm going to do here is I'm not going to waffle around. I'm just going to put out info that people will actually benefit from. And it's on there and it's free. So, you know, please watch it and please share it on your Facebook or whatever social media you use, because it can help people and it's free. I'm not selling anything when I sell the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
No, of course. I can tell you're just a compassionate person. You want to communicate. You want to give people tools to help. And that's awesome. So I will put that at the bottom of the show, in the show notes, of course.
Thank you. Yeah. And and that's something that we get hit up with a lot as capitalists. Like, you just want the poor to starve in the street. And it's like, no, because if you actually care about the issues, if you care about the poor or anything, you'll look at the empirical evidence. And, you know, there was, I think, 12 years between the certain period in the 50s and when the war on poverty began. 68, when the poverty rate went down by 1% a year, and then you had the war on poverty began, and you had this massive leveling out of the poverty level, and now the gap between the rich and poor has been growing forever and ever. So obviously whatever the government's so-called done to help with poverty has not worked. I mean, the free markets help because we've invented all these things like Hoovers and washing machines and dishwashers and things that mean people have got more free time. And they're less impoverished and don't have to spend so much time cleaning and shit like that. And all the machines have mean that people need to do less work for more cash. But as free marketeers, we get told that we must not care about the poor. To be honest, you're perfectly entitled to be a libertarian for a different reason, which is just like, what I do with my life is my business and I don't want anyone to interfere with me. That's true of me, but that's not kind of like the only kind of libertarian I am. I do actually, you know.
You actually care about people. No, yeah, absolutely. And it's easy.
I know I've been talking for ages, but I really don't think my values have changed that much since I was a liberal. It's just the reason and evidence that I've had access to has changed. But please do go on, guys.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you can tell, and it's so, sometimes I find myself get really defensive when I'm speaking to people and I talk about what I believe, because there's a underlying sort of thing that nobody wants to talk about, the sort of thing of, well, you must not like the poor then. And I feel like saying to people, oh my God, that's like so far from true.
See, even the thing is true though, even if you didn't care about the poor,
it doesn't make what I'm saying.
Doesn't change
untrue.
Your argument.
Like, I know. But I'm just saying, I do care though. But some people are libertarian and don't really care. They just know this is the way to do it. And
well, is that not the difference between being like, say, a deontological libertarian or a consequentialist libertarian, technically, if I'm.
You're using an awfully big word there, Dan.
Just for anyone who doesn't, so a consequentialist is concerned with the results of actions, whereas a deontologist says that something's moral or immoral based on principles. So like, you should not kill would be a principle.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I would say that I'm a deontological libertarian, but I needed to be convinced of the consequentialist arguments before I became one.
That's fair. That's very, very fair. Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
But, no, I think that makes sense. That's okay.
You know, people say, well, you know, what if I've had debates with people who've done a bit of philosophy and I've said that I'm more or less a deontologist. And they said, well, you know, what if blah, blah, you know, such and such a thing happens. And I was like, well, look, if the principle consistently has bad consequences, it's not a very good principle. So I think in a sense that no one's, you know, 100% one or the other. I mean, they might claim to be. I guess Kant was 100% deontological. But at the end of the day, you know, you get these ridiculous situations. Well, what if someone was hanging from a flagpole? Would they be able to violate someone's property? Or, you know, what if you had to push someone in front of a train to save 20 other people? And I think really the answer to those questions is kind of like, in that situation,
yeah,
are you really thinking about ethics? I mean, ethics is like, you're going to make a split decision. These are kind of like very, very unlikely. And, yeah, you know, you might say that someone, you might debate whether someone did or did not do the right thing. But at the end of the day, you're probably going to go, well, that was not ideal, but given the mitigating circumstances, I don't think we're going to hang this guy or anything like that. I mean, I don't really think that ethics are a consideration in lifeboat situations, because ethics are conceptual, whereas real life is real life. And yeah, okay, so if this guy's hanging from a flagpole and he kicks in someone's window to save his life, and that person decides to sue them for kicking in their window, I guess, I don't know, maybe in a libertarian society they would do that, you know.
I always say, you know,
you're still going to kick in the window to save your butt, you know.
Yeah, I always say, like, cross that bridge when we come to it, you know. I'll let you know at the time.
Yeah.
When I'm standing there in that weird situation where I have to push one person. Who's the psychopath behind me holding the gun to my head telling me I have to push one person to who is this person?
Yeah, exactly.
Who is this weirdo who goes around putting people? It's Stefan Molyneux. He goes around putting people in lifeboat situations.
Yeah,
holding guns to it. But it's just like, it is ridiculous. I've heard people say that. I've heard, like, I've heard people say to me, "Oh, well, if you know drug cartels have children," and I'm like, "Hold on a minute. Do you know what are you saying to me?" And it's like, yes, I'm for the decriminalization, which would then eventually make drug cartels obsolete.
Exactly.
So why would there be any drug
cartels if it was a free market?
Exactly. You know, if you could go down to the shop and buy your heroin for, you know, a couple of quid,
it'll be clean,
you can get your nice buzz, and I don't care what you do in your house, as long as you do what you want to do, and, you know, it makes the drug cartels obsolete. But yeah, that's just just one level.
See, just on that, if anyone thinks that sounds a bit, you know,
crazy,
Walter Block actually took on the argument in his book Defending the Undefendable.
I love that book.
Where that's he basically worked out that heroin would be a lot cheaper if it was you know, decriminalized,
if the dealers stop getting sent away, and then the price goes up,
and then there would be less crime, because ridiculous. It would be much more affordable than it is now.
So, but people don't want to hear that. People don't want to hear that narrative.
But do you know anyone in our generation who thinks drug prohibition is a good idea?
Yes, actually, yes.
Regularly.
I mean, you say our age. I'm 29.
As am I.
Well, there you go. So, yes, I do.
I just have to check,
because sometimes when I talk to people, I find out they're 21 or something, and I go, hold on a minute. we're from two different worlds here.
And that's just something that's really stupid. I mean,
yeah.
I know. I would love to debate Peter Hitchens. I don't know if you know any of him.
I'm familiar.
Yeah,
he's really for the drug war. I would love to debate him.
I know.
I would love to debate him, because it's such an undefendable position.
It really is.
It's really weird.
In this day and age, unless you're like an aging person who doesn't know what they're talking about. Yeah.
When you look at the statistics of how expensive it is to actually lock people up, and I'm just like, Peter Hitchens, if you're for the drug war, then you fund it. Fund it out of your pocket.
Oh, yeah.
Don't ask me to pay for it through the tax system, mm-hmm. which, you know, really annoys me, because of my profession, I kind of think that I do enough. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I put out these resources for free, and the only thing I really do for a profession is try and help people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like a cut of my income needs to go away to running stupid programs like Peter Hitchens' drug war and things like that.
I'd
rather
tough,
give it to
yeah.
charity if I had to make a choice. Yeah. What were you going to say, Katie?
No, I was going to say, I understand what you're meaning about the taxes. I believe it should all be voluntary, but hey, there's a lot of things we want. But it's a tough one.
I kind of take your point as well about, like, you mentioned just there, like, people in our generation if they think that drug prohibition is a good idea. And I've got to say, most of the people I know have either used drugs what are considered illegal drugs
semi-regularly. Everyone I know has used drugs. Everyone.
Or has used it at one point, some kind of drugs, whether they've only, they had a joint when they were 17 or something,
or
you know,
or they do something every day.
Whatever. It's sort of, you know, it's the same sort of thing. So actually, I know what you mean. It seems to be that if it's going the way I think it's going, then...
I think it'll die out, that ignorance. Anthony, do you think that'll die out?
I think it's on the way out.
Yeah.
I think post-internet, it's really, really hard to avoid facts. And some people are immune to facts and some people are immune to reason and evidence, but it's becoming less. I think that people are much, much more critical thinkers than they were in the past, and that's sort of maybe taken off in the Enlightenment. And I guess we need to inspire people into having sane positions, actually, I think. Debate and argument is good, but it usually only works when the person that you're discussing has a level of respect for you. They're more likely to be open to your positions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think this is quite a good place to start wrapping up now.
Yeah. I've actually, this has brought up a lot of stuff. I'm going to take away, have a wee think.
I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
Anthony, why don't you tell us where people can find you online and what kinds of things they can find? I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier. You alluded to some of your work.
I put everything up that relates to either politics or self-help on anthonysamaroff.com. I used to have a website that was just specifically for my coaching and counselling services, but I'm replacing that at the moment. So anthonysamaroff.com is a pretty good place to find pretty much all my public media. And just to let anyone know that if you heard me through this podcast, send me an email at enrichyourlife@outlook.com and mention that you heard me on here, and I'd be delighted to give you a freebie if you're interested in some coaching or counselling.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be cool. So I will put that at the bottom. I don't know why I'm pointing. I'm not on TV, but I'm saying I put it at the bottom at the show notes.
Is that maybe the bottom?
I'm pointing down. Yeah, I'm pointing down towards the couch. So, you can find Anthony at anthonysamaroff.com. Anthony, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a really nice conversation.
And you can find more from Dan and I at greeningoutpodcast.com.
Yes, thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.